Dr. Yasmin, India is in the midst of an unprecedented crisis. What is UNICEF doing to support India as the country fights the second wave of COVID-19 infections?
You know, this crisis, this pandemic has been with us for over a year now. And last year, we were working very closely with the government of India to put in place the type of messaging that's needed for the social vaccination, which is wash hands, wear masks, and watch your distance. And working really with community partners was crucial last year, as was getting remote learning started. You know, for a year now, children have not gone to school. And just as we saw the senior grades in school are restarting, the stock of exams might restart, people were pretty much getting normalized, and then the second wave hit us. So it's really been all hands on deck and focus on a number of critical things. One, of course, is the essential oxygen equipment, oxygen concentrators, and oxygen generating plants. This is a support we started last year, but this year we're just doing it in a much wider scope, because that is the need of the hour. At the same time, we're working to procure RT-PCR testing machines. So we're really working very closely with the government departments, with ICMR, with state governments, to put in place the type of critical emergency equipment they need. And at the same time, since last year, as you know, the push to get COVID vaccination delivered to people. So in the third quarter of last year, we started working on preparing to expand the cold chain equipment for India. UNICEF and WHO, we have been partners of the government in the immunization program for a number of years now. Cold chain for the COVID vaccine, protocols for adult vaccination had to be adapted. And we used our experience with childhood immunization to really anticipate what are the bottlenecks we're likely to face, what are the sort of vaccine hesitancy or vaccine eagerness issues we're likely to face, and really worked hard on supporting that launch of the vaccines being produced, distributed, and of course, now we have close to 160 million doses administered, which is a huge number, and it has to continue.
Do you think India's second wave will affect the vaccination efforts in the country in any way? Is India well equipped to handle mass vaccination in the new scenario with such a vast outbreak?
There's no country in the world probably that has been prepared to run through on an emergency basis starting a mass vaccination program. So the know-how, the logistics arrangements to have the people who will administer the vaccines, the reporting side of it, all that is in place. And the challenge, of course, is the numbers, the size of India, the distances that sometimes have to be covered, the terrain that needs to be covered. So it's not an easy job, but I believe that if it's possible anywhere, it is going to be possible here.
Do you think vaccination is the only way to deal with a situation like this in the wake of such massive spike of COVID cases? How important it is to immunize all adults now?
Immunization or vaccination is important, and we know that it's not enough. So it's crucial, but it's not enough, because the spread of the virus is mutating. The virus is still spread through droplet infection. It's that closeness, it's the proximity, it's the rapid transmission from one person to another that is so dangerous about it. And my anticipation is that while we continue to soar the numbers of vaccinated people, we are still going to have to remain vigilant when it comes to our practices, the social vaccination practices. So that is going to be with us for years to come, I would think.
India is also the largest producer of vaccines in the world and has been generously sending COVID vaccines to other countries through the COVAX facility of the UN. In the current scenario, when more vaccines are needed for its own people, how does this affect the global vaccination efforts, especially COVAX?
So this is a challenge that the world is facing. The world still relies on India for the production of vaccines that prevent childhood diseases. Plus, we have this new vaccine that has been developed. Definitely, the world is coming together to support India to ramp up its vaccine production. These are difficult decisions that governments are having to make. It also means that we live in a global village and we need to be looking at how do we expand vaccine production in more countries so that as a world, when there is a need at this scale, rather than protecting our borders, we're really looking at how we can move the logistics so that those countries that do not have the capacity to produce vaccines are not left behind.
At a time like this, when India's needs are immense, what more needs to be done and what does UNICEF need in order to fulfill these requirements?
Thing is, the consequences of the pandemic is going to be with us for a number of years. We're still not over the pandemic, for one. Second, we're already seeing the secondary effects, especially on children and the poorest and most marginalized groups. So the threats that children face, of course, they're losing their learning. In the best of situation, we estimate that about 50% of children have access to remote learning. That's 50% of nearly 300 million children who are of school going age in India. It also means that as families' economy is affected, as the job market is affected, we are already hearing of stories where negative coping mechanisms are being adopted by families, such as child labor, early marriage of girls especially, even the criminal activities of child trafficking. So in these circumstances, when we see that the stresses of the pandemic directly on the parents, transmitted to the children, and the consequential violence that we see, importantly, the psychosocial trauma that children are facing, we have to be addressing them now and to be prepared that these are going to have some longer term sequelae. Because you've seen in the media, we now see as greater number of people are dying, there are children who are being left without parental care or without caregivers. And what sort of arrangements, fostering arrangements, alternative care arrangements can be made for these children means investment. So as the world economy is going to be hit, the need for investment is going to be higher. And that's where we are relying on non-traditional donors. I think the way we've seen communities come together, the way we've seen public donating, it's unprecedented. And I think that is going to be crucial, that we need the investment in the services that are critical for children to remain healthy, for them to thrive, and also to recover from the trauma that they're facing of this pandemic.